Parshas Bo. Next start, we'll go through and we'll study. Those will be different than last week. For those who struggled through that one, we'll feel a smoother sailing. This week we're going to study a bunch of psukim, different than some weeks where we ask a whole bunch of questions and have one stream of thought. They just want to go through the verses and study a certain passage and we'll gain all that there is to be gained from that, as they often like to do. So the particular piece I want to study is Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of Parshas Bo. It starts on page 346. The background to this, as you flip your pages, we are in between the 9th and 10th plagues. At this point in our story, Perek Yud, already the 10th chapter, already describes the plague of darkness, the second to last plague, and that which took place over there. And at the end of that description, on flip through on page 344 and 345, right at the end there you have the conversation which seems to repeat itself over and over again, in which Moshe basically says it's time to go. Paro decides not. Hashem hardens his heart and he refuses to send him. At the end of the plague, the last couple of verses on page 344 and 335, and at the end there Paro says, Vayomelo Paro leich me olai, in verse Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, in 27-28, Paro says, Gleave, go out from here. He shomer lucha al toisef ra'oyis ponai, ki b'yoyim ra'yischo ponai tamus. And he warns Moshe, I do not ever want to see your face again. If you come back here and show me your face, you shall surely die. To which Moshe responds, Kain divarta, you have spoken correctly, la'osif od ra'os panach, I will not be back here ever to see your face. And that's the end. Moshe will leave from the palace at this point for the last time and not return. He, of course, will see Paro one more time, but that's going to be under different circumstances where Paro will come running after Moshe. But at this point, Paro kicks Moshe out, and what we're going to study is Perek Yud Aleph, is the final prophecy which Moshe then gives to Paro before leaving. Paro has just said, I refuse, we've had 9 plagues, I'm not letting him go, get out of here, I don't want to see you again. Moshe says, you got it, that's what you want, you will not see me again. And then he gives him Perek Yud Aleph, which is his final dialogue with Paro before turning and leaving, and that'll be the final time out of the palace. That's what I want to study this morning, is that final discussion that they have. So the Perek is broken up into 2 parts. You can see on page 346, the first 3 psukim, as the Chumash breaks it up into different paragraphs, there's a space there in the middle, is the actual prophecy that Moshe receives from Hashem. So we have 3 psukim describing what Hashem tells to Moshe that he should do and say. And then the back half, starting with Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, is then what Moshe actually says to Paro. And then it concludes the last 2 or 3 psukim, again, with Hashem speaking to Moshe. That's the breakdown of this final dialogue. So let us begin it. We're on page 346, beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem speaks to Moshe. This is again in the palace, in between the 9th and 10th plague. The Ramban points out a little bit later, well, I'll mention it here, that this conversation is actually happening before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Jews, of course, leave on Yudal, the night of the 14th, is when they bring their Karban Pesach, and they leave on the 15th. This is taking place, this conversation, more than 2 weeks before that, was actually the final time that Moshe and Paro dialogue in the palace. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Oid nego echad avial Paro vial Mitzrayim. I have one last plague to bring upon Paro. Of course, we're in between 9 and 10. They've already just had choshech, they had darkness. One more, says Moshe Hashem to Moshe. Achrei chen yishalach eschem mizeh. And after that, he will send you from here. Kishocho kaloh. Garesh Yigaresh Eschem Mizeh. The back half of this pasuk is very difficult. We'll translate it the way that Art Scroll does. After this final plague is sent, when he sends forth, Achrechein Yishalach Eschem Mizeh, he will send you forth from here, Kisholcho Kala. It shall be complete. When he sends you forth, Kisholcho Kala, that will be the completion of an entire process. Goresh Yigarish Eschem Mizeh. He shall drive you out of here. So the prophecy that Hashem gives to Moshe, remember, Moshe is not speaking to Paro here. This is Hashem speaking to Moshe. I have one last thing to send to the Mitzrayim, to send to Paro and to his people. After that, he will send you out. And when he sends you out, it will be complete. What will be complete? What will be complete is the entirety of this process. There's the 10 plagues have been part of a whole process, as you're familiar with the Pesach story we've discussed in the past, we're not going to get into now. Each one of the plagues was aimed at teaching a new lesson about the nature of Hashem and his relationship to the Jewish people. It will be complete. We will have the whole process. So number 10, of course, is a classic number in Jewish thought of completeness and wholeness. So the way Rashi reads the Pasuk is, after this last one, then it will be Kishalcho Kala. When he sends you, we will be complete. Garish, Yigarish, and then he will send you out of here. He will kick you out from here at that point, using the word Yigarish of Gerushin, is to be totally kicked out of one's house at that point. Now, the way that we just read the Pasuk is the way that Rashi reads it. If you want to get really technical, if you see under the word Mizeh, on the second line in the Pasuk, Kein Yishalach Eschem Mizeh, is what's called an Asnachta. It's a little chop, a note underneath the word Mizeh, which tells you there's a pause there. That's how, if you're landing it, you'd say Yishalach Eschem Mizeh Kish, and you'd put a comma and a pause. That's how you would read it. And Rashi translated as if you read it that way. What I want to share with you, just as a starting point, we'll have a lot of different thoughts today, is the Svarno has a interpretation of the Pasuk, reading it as if that weren't there. Very often the drushas of the way that the sages expound upon the Torah to give alternate and deeper meanings is they sometimes read it almost as if there wasn't a comma there. So he reads it in a way as if there wasn't a comma which would net the following result. After this last plague is sent to the Mitzrim, Yishalach Eschem Mizeh Kisholcho. He will send you from here, Hashem says to Moshe, meaning Paro will send you from here, as he is sending you now. Meaning, how is Moshe being sent out of the palace right now? Right? With anger, b'chori af, get out of here, I never want to see you again. Says the Sfarno, reading this pasuk, Hashem says to Moshe, I got one left, and then he's going to send you Kisholcho. He's going to send you in the way that he's going to send you the way he's sending you now. Kaloh Yigarish Eschem. But all of you he will send like that. Not only the way that he's sending you and Aharon now as individuals in which he's kicking you out, but that he will send all of you out like that. He will kick you all out in such a way of hurry off with anger and with haste, with hurry, get out. All of you will be sent in such a manner. The significance of this, says this far, and it was very interesting. He says it as follows. My apologies. This Sfarno writes, "Ki amnan zu midas tzidko shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu." This is the midah of the righteousness of Hashem. Kishi is akesh odemei asos haroi, when a person refuses to do that which is appropriate for him to do, which is the ratzon of his Creator. When his Creator, and a person's Creator, Hashem, wants a person to do something, and you refuse to do it, Ya'aseh ma'aseh borach mimenu b'tzara v'yogon. That which you're refusing to do pleasantly, you will now have to do with great pain and suffering. V'lo l'ratzon, but it will not be l'ratzon, it won't be pleasing for you. I gave you a chance to do it in a way that would be pleasing. When you refuse to do that which you need to do in a pleasing manner, says the Sfarno, Hashem says, I'll do it in a non-pleasing manner. My will be done. The only question that you have is how you'd like to do it. And he brings two examples. One is from the Teichacha, the admonition that there are two separate times the Torah gives us these horrible lists of curses which will befall the Jewish people. In the second one, which comes in the end of Sefer Devarim, so it says, Tachas asher lo avadato as Hashem elokecha b'simcha, because you didn't serve Hashem with joy. So what happens, says this Sfarno? V'yavadato as leivecha. So now you'll serve your enemies. You had a choice. You could either serve me with joy. You didn't want to serve me with joy. You'll serve your enemies. Let's see how joyous that is. You think that's going to be better than your other option? That's what you get. And it brings another example from the generation of the desert, the Dor HaMidbar, who were decreed after the Meraglim, after the spies were sent decreed to die in the desert. So the Pasuk says, in Lo Ka'asher, Dibartem Be'oznai, Kein Eselim. I'll do exactly as they spoke. What did that generation say? Why did you bring us here to die in the desert? We're never going to make it out. That's what you want, that's what you get. So if you're not doing my will of going in order, which is the way that your soul, you'll stay here and you'll die here. That's how you want it to be. That's how it will be. So the Sforna says that's how he reads into this pasuk what Hashem says to Moshe. I have one left for Mitzrayim, and then he'll send you all out in the way that he's sending you out right now. Just like now he's sending you out, saying, "I never want to see you again. Get out of my face." He's going to send you all out like that, but he's going to do it. Why is he going to speak like that? Why is Paro going to say that? Because the pain and suffering of Mitzrayim is going to be so enormous, the death of the firstborn throughout the entire land, he's going to say, get out of here. So he had his choice to do it pleasantly, and if you don't want to do it like that, so then you'll have to do it in a manner that's not so pleasant. Okay, thought number one. Let's continue on in the psukim. Dabir no ba'adnei ha'am. Let's read these next two psukim together. Dabir no, so again, this is the prophecy Moshe is receiving from Hashem in the palace. First, Hashem tells Moshe there's going to be one more plague and then you'll leave. And now Hashem says to Moshe, speak to the people. Dabir no ba'aznei ha'am, pasuk beis. Vayisha'alu ish me'eis re'ehu v'isha me'eis ru'usa. And let each man and each woman request of their fellow man and woman klei chesef u'klei zahav. Let them each request silver vessels, golden vessels. Vayitein Hashem. And Hashem granted the people favor in the eyes of Mitzrayim. And Moshe himself also was very great in the land of Egypt, in the eyes of the servants of Paro, and in the eyes of the people. So here in the middle of the prophecy, in which Moshe is being told what to tell Paro in preparation for the last and tenth plague, there's a little sidebar in which Hashem says to Moshe, there's going to be one more, and when you get out of here, don't forget to tell the people, please tell the people, Dabir na. The word na always is a language of please. Please speak to the people and tell them to ask from the men and from their women friends vessels of gold and of silver. And then the Torah states, and Hashem made it that the Egyptian people, that the Jews found favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and Moshe was a great in their eyes as well. Okay, a couple of comments, points. I don't want to, very often, sometimes we spend a long time bringing out all the nuances. Anything jump out at you about these two verses? What needs clarification?
Well, one thing I wondered about where it said, please speak in the ears of the people. That's an unusual expression. Usually it's just, please tell the people, or please speak to the people, in the ears of the people.
Okay. I didn't see. I wonder if that's connected with the other part of that, which the commentators pick up on, is that language of please. It's an odd language.
Speak softly, maybe.
So there's clearly, and I think those two go together. I think the phrase in the ears of the people, I think, goes together with the language of please. But that needs clarification. Why here does Hashem feel the need to cajole, so to speak, the people? Please, Moshe. Please, I mean, what is he asking the people to do? Right? Please. Please ask them, take all the gold and silver. Please. Why does he need to beg them? Why does Hashem need to ask Moshe that when he tells this to the people, that I'm requesting something great from you? Why is that necessary? Yeah?
Sounds like an impossible thought for a slave to go to the slave master, the abuser, and to come and say, give me your wealth. It's almost like you can't even believe that you're going to be leaving slavery. Can you imagine taking the...
Okay, possibility. Fair thought. Excellent. Okay, that's one ha'ara. Why is this please? Watch that language. And the second pasuk, we have some interesting points. Pay attention to the... who. Yeah?
Well, I was just going to say that it's odd that after the plagues, that they would come to their masters and say, oh, can we please have your gold? And say, oh, sure, no problem. I mean, that whole...
Correct. So that's the second verse, which is pointing that out, saying, and Hashem will grant favor in the eyes of the Egyptians because it is an oddity. So we'll get to that also in a second. That is 100% correct. Look at the way that the Pasuk Gimel, the third verse, describes who is finding favor in whose eyes. It's really broken down. There are two distinct parts of this Pasuk. First, we describe who's finding favor in whose eyes.
The people, the
whole... Good, the Jewish people, and in whose eyes are they finding favor?
Everyone.
Right? That seems to be two all-encompassing ideas, right? The first part of the verse says, and all of the Jewish people found favor in the eyes of the Egyptian people. The word all isn't there, but I'm adding the word all because the Torah just describes it as the people. Like the Jewish people found favor in the Egyptian people's eyes. Very nice. But then the Torah says, and I'm going to further this thought, and then what do we say? And Moshe was a great man, in whose eyes?
The Egyptians.
Whose eyes? Okay, in the land of Egypt.
Yeah.
Well, he was great in the land of Egypt, and then we describe men in whose eyes? And in whose eyes?
Servants.
Excellent. And?
In the eyes of the people. We don't know which people.
Excellent. A funny phrase. Moshe, first we describe the Jewish people were found favor in the eyes of the Egyptian people. And Moshe became a great man in the land of Egypt and found favor in the eyes of the servants of Paro and the people. Which people?
Well, it's probably the Jewish people.
What are two choices?
People, because the servants of Paro could mean all of the Egyptians or servants of Paro. And then the eyes of the people could be the Jewish people. Although the servants of Paro could also mean the Jewish people because they
also servants of Paro. Okay. Excellent. Okay. So here the question. This is an interesting way of describing it. Okay. So let's go back over these two psukim and see what the Mefarshim have to say about it. Let's start with Rashi. Rashi says Daber Na. If you want to follow this, that's the first line on the first column, the end of the first line. Daber Na. Ein na ela lashon bakasha. The word na is a language of bakasha. Bakasha is a request. Levakesh is a request of something, which means that Hashem is requesting of Moshe, please ask the people to become wealthy. So now the first we're going to be bothered. Why do I need to beg Moshe? Why do I need to ask to become wealthy? So we had a couple of beautiful ideals already on the table. Let's look at Rashi says as follows. Bivakosha mimcha his hira malkach. Please, I beg you, command them to do this. Shelo yoimar oso tzadik Avraham, that the tzadik Avraham shouldn't say, ve'ivdum ve'inu osam kayim bohan. The pasuk describes, if you flip back quickly to page. It's 15. Page 67. I'm sorry, 68 and 69. So, Pasuk Yud-Gimel reads, 13 on page 68 and 69, Vayomer Avram, Hashem says to Avram, Yadoa teida, you need to know, ki ger yezarecho ve'eretz lo lahem. Your children will become foreigners in a land that does not belong to them. Ve'avadum ve'inu osam. And they will serve, they will oppress them, they will make them into slaves 400 years. So Avram was told this way back when, that his children were going to be oppressed, they were going to be enslaved, they were going to be in a foreign land for 400 years. And then Hashem says in the next pasuk Yudalit, Ve'gam es ha'goy asher ya'avodu don anochi, but then you should know, the nation that causes them all of that problem, I will judge them. I will take care of it. And we've seen that where? In the 10 plagues. We're up to number 9 already in our part of the story. And then they will leave with great wealth. Says Hashem to Moshe, we're on the cusp of the redemption. We're in between plagues 9 and 10. Hashem says to Moshe, please, I beg you, ask the children of Israel to borrow gold and silver vessels. Says Rashi, why is he begging him to become wealthy? Isn't that an obvious thing? They could be able to do that easily. Says Rashi, no. Because Hashem says, I have to deal with, you know, my good friend Avram up here in Shemayim. You know what he's going to say to me? The first half of the verse you fulfilled, Hashem. You sent them down there, 400 years, you enslaved them, you kept them captive, they were suffering. How could you not complete? What about the back half of the verse? So Hashem says to Moshe, please, I beg you, I promise Avraham that his children would leave, Berchush Gadol, they would leave with great wealth. We're about to leave. I need them to do this. I beg of you, tell them, gather the gold and the silver, so that when they leave, that Hashem, Avraham, should not have a claim on me, saying, yeah, the part of the slavery you fulfilled, and you didn't fulfill the great wealth. Therefore, Hashem begs of Moshe, tell the people, make sure it happens, make sure that they leave with the gold and the silver. That's how Rashi understands why this request of the gold and silver comes in a language of please, please ask them to do this. The Sfarno here writes, a little different twist on that, the Sfarno writes, in one line, he says, Daber no, why is it a lashon of bakasha? Why is it a language of a request? Shelo yidagu shema besivos hamamon yimsu atzvam lirdof acharehem. The Jewish people said, you want me to take their gold and their silver? Are you kidding me? Do you know what they're going to do as soon as we get out of here? They're going to pursue us. Like, it's not bad enough that we're leaving and that they're going to wake up the next morning and say, how come my slippers aren't at my bed? How come the newspaper hasn't been brought in? Where's breakfast? They left? That's not bad enough. They're going to want to pursue us. They're going to open up their cupboards and say, we gave them what? All of our gold and all of, they're going to take after us. So Hashem says to Moshe, beg them. Please, tell them. It's okay. Ask anyway. Ask from the gold. Ask for the silver. Ki bozeh tihiye teshuasam. Because through this will be their salvation. Yes, they will pursue after you. And then you'll see the final salvation. Because when they pursue, what's going to happen? Kriyas Yamsuf. They'll be in the sea, and you'll all watch them die in front of you. So yes, they're right. It's a fearful thing. It's a frightening thing. You want me to take the gold and silver? It's just going to give them more reason to pursue us. Yes, but beg them to do it anyway. Beg them, please. Because through that, salvation comes. And so often, as if we only had a prophet to tell us that, we would engage in activities which seem to us to be a dead end. Right? It's a suicide. Are you kidding me? Why would I do this? And Hashem says, and you're right. It's not that I'm telling you, no, you don't really see. You are right. Everything that you fear is correct. Because you're going to take their stuff, they're going to come after you. All right. But you know what? That's really where your salvation will come from. From where you can't see salvation, from where you only see death and destruction, from that will spring your salvation. Because you can't see the sea splitting. You just see yourself trapped. They're going to run after you. You're stuck. What's going to happen? I'll take care of you. So the Sforno says, that's why there's a language of no. Please, I beg you, ask them to take the gold and the silver. So two beautiful ideas. One you have from the Sforno more in Pshat. And Rashi seems to tell us a little bit more of a medrash. Rashi saying that it's because Avram is going to have a claim. It's a little bit more on a deeper level of a midrashim that Hashem promised to Avram there'll be slavery, but there'll be great wealth at the end. And therefore Hashem begs Moshe, tell the people, I need to fulfill my promise. Get them all the gold and silver they can. And the Sforno reads into the Pasuk, simply speaking to the people's fears, which is even building on what you guys had said, like, how can I even think about doing this? These have been my masters. I'm going to go and take their gold and their silver. So the Sforno says, yeah, they were afraid. And Hashem says to Moshe, beg them to do it, because in the end, this is really where their salvation will come. Yeah?
But the Nah is spoken to Moshe, right, not to the people. You know, I mean, right. I can see it that he's pleading with Moshe specifically because this is could be a humiliation. Moshe could regard this as almost like a, how can I do this? The people have already, you know, I've already caused them difficulties. And now he's saying, please, I beg you, do this thing for me. Speak to them. And everything else follows, right. But it could have been that the Na would have come inserted where it refers to the people. Here, he's begging Moshe.
Correct.
Because this is hard for Moshe to do.
Okay. Why is it hard? Because I'm not understanding why is it hard for Moshe to do. I mean, you're right that this is being spoken to Moshe. That's correct. This is at the point where Hashem is speaking to Moshe, and he's saying to Moshe, from you, I beg, go make sure the people do it.
Do this one more thing for me, because I know to you it seems impossible.
And I think you're correct. You're correct on both points. Both according to Rashi and the Sforno, Moshe has this difficulty. You know, and in Rashi's approach, he's saying, Moshe, you need to do this for me because of what Avram is going to say. Or in the Sforno, like, Moshe, tell them because you're going to say, they're not going to want to do this, they're going to be so afraid. Moshe, I'm telling you, do it. Just do it. So you're correct that this is being set to Moshe, that he's the one who's going to need to put it forth and convince the people to do it. So from that point, you are correct.
It seems that somewhere somewhere in the plagues, the Jews would have could have taken the gold and silver vessels.
Yes.
And rather, but Moshe is instructed to ask them for it.
Correct, 100%.
And why would they give them? Why would they give them up? Why would they turn them over?
That's what the verse is saying. That Hashem gave the Jewish people favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. That they gave it to them. And you're right, during the previous plague, which we didn't learn, we were picking up after that, during the plague of darkness, the Midrashim say that the Midrashim couldn't move anywhere. And the Jewish people went around and they saw what was there, so that they would ask and they would say, later, I'd like to borrow, you know, your fine china. I don't have any fine china. Oh, yeah, it was in that cabinet I saw. So they would know where it was, but they still asked them, and it was given to them willingly. They did not take it, yeah.
Well, I was looking ahead and more toward the end of the verse, on page 359, it says it's after the plague of the death of the firstborn that they asked for the verse 35.
Right.
So the timing of when they did the asking was
later.
Was after the
plague, right.
Yeah. We didn't realize that. No. At least I didn't.
Can we say favors more fear? They see that these people are connected to this great God. And, I mean, they couldn't have all of a sudden started to like the Jewish people after they're suffering so much.
Why not? As the Pasuk says, V'yitein Hashem Eschein HaMidei Mitzrayim.
I understand, like, there's a center, like the Stockholm Center, where people that suffer from, like, capture, they start identifying with them so much, they start seeing good in them. I'm wondering, I don't know how favor...
I don't know why...
How do you explain favor? How do they...
They like them.
You liked them. But that must be a miracle then, because how much
you say? Yeah, who's
saying
it's not a miracle?
So that's a miracle.
It doesn't say that the people naturally, it says, Vayitain Hashem Eschein Ha'am
Ben Yisrael.
That's it. It's a miracle.
Okay.
Perhaps instead of the word like, it could be respect. Because oftentimes we see that when the Jewish people are strong, our enemies, quote, respect us. We see it all the time in current day.
I agree. I think the language of chayin is the Ramban. I want to read it to you in a moment. Actually, uses the word ahava.
Oh,
love and favor.
That's a miracle.
Now, I want to read this right now. So let's get to this. So verse bay pasuk bay, the second pasuk says, ask the people to borrow, not to borrow. The word is vayisha'alu, which sometimes means to borrow. The Rashbam writes clearly here that it doesn't mean to borrow. It means to ask as a gift. There was no intention ever that this was being barred and returning. The Jewish people were told they were never to return to Mitzrayim, so no one had any intention that this was they were borrowing it. They were asking as gifts. And then Pasuk Gimel, verse 3 says, as we pointed out, there are two parts of this pasuk. First, that the Jewish nation found favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and then Moshe found favor in the eyes of the servants of Paro and of the nation. So let's break that down into its two components. Says the Ramban, what does it mean that the Jewish people found favor in the eyes of the Mitzrayim? So the Ramban writes, Shelo hoyu anshei Mitzrayim soinim osam al hamakos. A, that the Egyptians didn't hate the Jews because of the makos. That would have been the most natural response. If you were an Egyptian living in Mitzrayim at the time, you would really hate these people at this point. Mm-hmm. And your oldest has died. Not at this point, but they were about to, and they would have died by the time they actually asked. So your oldest of your family has died. You've been, your land has been decimated, your crops, your flocks have been destroyed, and it's all because of these people that you haven't sent them out. You're not very happy with them, for sure. So what does it mean that Hashem gave favor into the eyes of the Mitzrayim? They didn't hate the Jews. Not only that, says the Ramban, it wasn't just, excuse me, that the Egyptians didn't hate the Jews, Ava mosifin bohem ahava, they were Mosif Ahava. They increased their love for them. Found favor. You just like a person. They found favor in their eyes. Laymore, listen to this Ramban. This is so unbelievable. You know what the Egyptians said when the Jews came knocking on their doors? And they said, I'd like your gold and silver, please. They said, Anachnu harishoyim, we are the evil ones. We are the wicked ones. Gam oisim chamas, we have done all sorts of horrible things. The word Hamas, of course, means thievery and stealing. It's lost on the world that the word Hamas is an old, old word. which has all sorts of negative connotations. We are the ones who have been the source of all the problems. V'royihu, and it's appropriate, she'achoinein eschem halukim, that Hashem should do great things for you. That's what it means, says the Ramban, that we found favor in the eye. Now, Ron pointed out an amazing thing. This is miraculous. This is an act of God changing the perspective of a people who should, by all natural means, hate us, who did, clearly, for 400 years. That says the Ramban, do you know what it means that Hashem gave us favor in their eyes? They turned around and they said, you know, I see. We were the ones who caused the problems. It's appropriate that God should do great things for you. Here, take my gold, take my silver. We think that we're going to get the nations of the world to do that because we're going to get 1,000 people to sign a petition. Or we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Vayitein Hashem Eschenam. It's when Hashem gave favor to the eyes of the nations around us, we found the favor. Until then, nothing changed. But anyway, that's not the Ramban's point. The Ramban's point is that's what it means that Hashem gave us favor in their eyes. That they not only did they not hate us, which they apparently had, they loved us, recognized themselves as the cause of the problem, and said it is appropriate that Hashem should do great things for you. That's what it means, the first half of the verse, that the nation, the Jewish nation, found favor in the eyes of the Egyptian nation. Now, what about Moshe? So it says, the pasuk then continues, like, that wasn't enough. And then we even said, and Moshe also was a great man. Why do we pull Moshe out of the equation? Why? He should just be included in the fact that the Jewish people. Says the Ramban, no, we pull Moshe out of the equation. We have a separate phrase in the pasuk to describe Moshe. Hamevi aleihem makos. He's the source. And if you trace it back to anyone, Moshe is the guy who's really the cause of all this. He's the guy who shows up from Midian, claims he's had some divine revelation, marches his way right into Paro, demands the people to leave, and then when Paro says no, like, everything falls apart in Mitzrayim. It's been a year of just one disaster after another. So says the pasuk, and Moshe himself, the cause, the source of all of this, Gadol Me'od B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, was great in throughout the entire land, in the eyes of all the servants of Paro and all of their colleagues. Now, what's with the second phrase? What is Uve'enei Ha'am? Who is that nation referring to? Which nation? Moshe was great in the eyes of the servants of Paro and the nation. Which nation? So we mentioned two possibilities. It's either the nation of Mitzrayim or it's the Jewish people. So the Ramban says, as you can imagine, there are two opinions expressed in the Mefarshim. He quotes both of them. One approach is, you know what the pasuk is referring to? Bnei Ha'am Yisrael. It's referring to the Jewish people. Why do we pull Moshe out and say, the way the verse would then read is, so the Jewish people found favor in the eyes of the Egyptian people. Moshe, who was the cause of all of Egyptian suffering, was great in the eyes of the Egyptians, and he was also great in the eyes of the Jews. What do we mean to say that he was also great in the eyes of the Jews? Says the Ramban, because until this point, what did the Jews had to say about Moshe? Only bad things. Moshe, when you came, things got so much worse for us. Moshe comes with prophecies and they say, Moshe, I can't even listen to you. Velo shamu el Moshe mikotze ruach. Our shortness of breath, avodah kasha. Moshe, I don't want to hear from you. Just go away. Like it was better without you. So the Torah says, and now at the conclusion of all of this, after the ninth and now in between the tenth plague, the Torah stresses, it's flipped. And Moshe was great, not only in the eyes of the Egyptians, but in the eyes of the Jewish people. He is now trustworthy as a prophet of Hashem, and he had become great in the eyes of the Jewish people. So the pasuk is describing, and here it switched, which would be an amazing thing, by the way. If you read the pasuk that way, it would almost seem it's now almost a full year later that he first showed up and made things worse, all of the plagues, and now the Torah testifies on the cusp of the 10th plague and the final redemption, or stiff-necked people, right? This is where now Moshe was great in the eyes of the people who had been unable to listen to him for so long. Now they viewed him as a great man. That's if you read the pasuk that it's a reference to Moshe being great in the eyes of the Jewish people. Says the Ramban, there's another way to read this pasuk, which would flow, it seems to me, a little bit more in the flow of the pasuk, that Moshe was great in the land of Mitzrayim, in the eyes of the servants of the Egyptians, and before the Egyptian people. Says the Ramban, if we read it like that, who is missing that Moshe is great in their eyes?
Paro.
Paro. Mm-hmm. Says the Ramban, you know what this pasuk is saying? Something, an unbelievable lesson. Moshe was great in the land of Mitzrayim. He was great before the servants of Paro, and he was great before the people of Paro. But he was not a great man in the eyes of... Why? Says the Ramban, Hashem did this on purpose. Ki Hashem omeitz az libo kineged Moshe. Hashem still hardened his heart before Moshe. V'davr lo shelo kahugon. He's speaking before him inappropriately. Why? Ki rotza Hashem. We're still one more chapter left in the story. What's this final chapter?
Firstborn.
Firstborn. And then what happens? Paro comes running. Where's Moshe? Hashem, says the Ramban, when Paro comes before Moshe and says, you're right, get out, enough. He wants Paro to come before Moshe as a person with whom he still hates and despises. Because then, when you're the humility before you come before this person, I don't want Paro coming before you, Moshe, already recognizing, this is a great man. This is a prophet of Hashem. Because when you walk in, you're humbled because of his greatness. But if you think that this person is still despised, is still a fraud, is still whatever, and then you have to come before him. And you have to say, you're right. I am wrong. Get out of here. Just take your people and leave. How much more degrading for Paro, how much more of a humiliation, how much more of a forced humility it puts on him. Says the Ramban, Moshe became great, but he was great only in the land of Mitzrayim, in front of the servants of Mitzrayim, and the people of Mitzrayim, but not to Paro. Not yet. To you, Paro, you will find that out when you're begging and pleading your case, bowing down before him, pleading with him, please, take your people and get out. And that's how the Ramban reads the pasuk, that Moshe had become great, but not before Paro, before everybody else. Beautiful nuance in the language, how he picks up on that. Yeah?
And this thing about favor, this whole theme of favor, you know, between last week's Parsha, it's kind of two questions. One, I heard Rabbi Feldman saying that the war was lost, pretty much because it needed to be more of a thought on a spiritual level than a physical level. And he said that part of, I don't know if anybody remembers that, I hope they do, because when he said it, I was shocked at first, because he was making a point later on, but it was asked to ask about later on. But it seems that fighting this whole experience is such a war, but on a different level of, not as physical, not with conventional weapons, but seems like to gain people's favor, God uses the Jewish people as almost like an example of, for the rest of the world, you know, what to do, and you know, as far as this is a way to look at life. But from what I gathered, I don't think you were here. I think you were on vacation. But Rabbi Feldman said that for the Jewish people, the only way to win the war is through Judaism, as far as a testimony to everyone else. And I don't know, I find that fascinating with this whole story, is just that from a Gentile perspective on this, and this, usually when most Christians study the Bible, they usually study it and they're just looking at the acts of the pestilence and all that kind of stuff, and then the waves coming in. But they missed the whole entire point. There's so many more points here.
That's what we're doing. Agree. Okay, let's get to some of those other points. So let's continue the story. So that's the conclusion of the first phrase of the prophecy. So Moshe is still standing in the palace. He's given this prophecy, which is really a couple of different threads to it. A, Moshe, beware, I'm going to send one more to Paro. And the second half of that, of you'll please ask the people to gather the gold and the silver, and don't worry, I will make sure that you find favor in the eyes of the Egyptians as you go, about gathering it. Now, the back half of this parak is now Moshe then conveying this to Paro. Says Moshe, Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer Moshe el Paro, Vayomer Moshe, Koy Amar Hashem, Kachatos Halayla, Ani Yotzei B'Soich Mitzrayim. Kachatos Halayla, towards, in the, about, how do I translate, at about midnight, I shall go out in the midst of Egypt. And what am I going to do at about midnight in the midst of Egypt? Umeis kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim, and all of the firstborns shall die in the land of Mitzrayim, Yibachor Paro, Hayoshev al Kisoi, starting from you, Paro, your Bachor who sits on the throne, Ad Bachor Ashivcha, Asher Acher Harechayim, to the lowly maidservant who sits on the millstone, when they translate that as Bachor Bachor Behema. Not only that, but even the firstborn of the animal flock as well will all perish. Let's just read one or two more verses to get the entire the context a little bit. There will be a tremendous outcry throughout the land of Mizraim, Asher kemohu lo niyisoch uchemohu lo soisif. That has never been, nor shall will ever be again, such a cry that will take place in the land of Mizraim. So this is how Moshe then conveys this over to Paro. Kachatos v'layla, in the middle of the night, around midnight, I will go out, says Moshe about Hashem. All the firstborns will die, firstborn from the throne, to the maidservant, to the animals, and it will be an unbelievable outcry which will emanate from the lands of Mitzrayim. When will this happen? About midnight when? Tonight? When's Pesach?
He doesn't say when, but it'll be the 14th.
Does Paro know that? The Ramban points out there is no date given on this prophecy. Paro is told, after a full year of plagues, we've gone through 9, Moshe now says, at number 10, I will go out at about midnight on a certain night, and I will kill all of your firstborns, yours, Paro, all of your peoples, from the maidservants, all the animals, but he doesn't say exactly when. Certainly adds, says the Ramban, to a little bit of the, uneasiness of when that will happen. The Ramban pointed out that it doesn't even say exactly when that will take place. Now, two great comments of this pasuk that we need to work through. What is kachatzos halayla? Kachatzos, at about midnight. When did Hashem actually do this?
At midnight.
At midnight. Does Hashem know when midnight is? Yeah, I think so. So, he did it at midnight. Yeah, Moshe doesn't say that. Moshe says it's going to happen at about midnight. Why does he say it that way? So Rashi here has a fairly well-known comment, and if it's not well-known to you yet, I want to make sure that it will be well-known to you because of its magnitude of what he's saying. Says Rashi, Rabbo Seinu Darshu, let me read it in a way that you can follow inside if you'd like. This is, on the first column, it's five lines from the bottom, right in the middle of the line. First Rashi explains what it would simply mean in the most simple meaning. Says Rashi, Rabbi Seinu Darshu, our rabbis, our sages have explained this. Kimo kibachatzi halayla. They say, around midnight this will happen. So Amru Moshe, Shomer Moshe kachatzos. Why did he say this? Shemashma samachlo. The implication that Moshe said was it'll happen around midnight. Olifanov, Olacharov, maybe it will happen a little bit before midnight, maybe a little bit after midnight, so that the astrologers of Paro and his timekeepers, they're not waiting for exactly the strike of the clock at 12 midnight. It's going to be around there, a little bit before, a little bit after. The lo omar b'chatzos, and he specifically did not say that it will happen at exactly chatzos. Shema yitu astenige Paro, because maybe the astrologers of Paro will make a mistake. And they'll be a little bit off. Not that Hashem will be off. Hashem will do it at exactly midnight. And their clocks will be off. In their world, it will have happened at 11:57. Maybe it will happen at 12:04. And it won't be exactly Chatzos. So what? So this is the 10th plague. Hashem has said to Moshe, tell Paro, firstborns are going to die. All of them. Animals, maidservants, up to Paro, all the people in between. They're all going to die. And it all happened. And it happened at 12:04 or 11:56. So, says Rashi, V'yomru, but you know what they're going to say? Moshe Badaihu. Moshe is literally a jokester. He's a charlatan. He's not for real. The whole thing is made up because, look, he said it was going to happen at Chatzos. And it didn't. It didn't happen at midnight, Moshe. It happened at 12:04. So in order that they shouldn't come to say that, in order that no one should think that Moshe is a charlatan, he's a quack, he made this whole thing up, so he said, Kachatzos. He said, it'll happen around midnight. So this thing, whenever it happens, whether or not they're correct in their times, they're incorrect in their times, it'll all be correct. And Rashi quotes from the statement of Chazal. The insight that Chazal have when they say this, the enormity of human nature. You're an Egyptian. You've been through 10 plagues. It's been a year of torture. Every single thing that Moshe has said will happen has happened. Exactly when he said it would happen, as he said it would happen. Starting from the plague of blood 12 months ago, all the way through. And now he has said the biggest, baddest, worst of them all. And it happens. There's death throughout Mitzrayim. Not a single household has survived it. From the animals, maidservants, Paro's family, and everyone in between. And it happened, according to your clocks, at 12:04. Your response, as an Egyptian? Ha! I knew it the whole time. Moshe's making this stuff up. There's no God. You're joking? And Moshe knew, but if that's what you want to see, that's what you'll say, and that's what you'll see. He'll send you proof after proof after proof after proof. And if you're not willing to see it, you're not interested in seeing it, and you don't want to see it, you will find some... Wouldn't you say to that Egyptian, don't you think your clock is off, maybe? Isn't that... Like, look at what's happened. And you think, according to your calculations, that it was 12:04. It's not that it actually happened at 12:04. According to your calculations, it happened at 12:04. Don't you think you're making a mistake? Don't you think maybe your calculation is a few minutes off? And Moshe said, they're not going to say that. They're going to say, I made the whole thing up because I wasn't accurate. So to avoid them saying that, so I said it's going to happen kachatzos, at around chatzos. So when it happens, there's be no room for anything, because at this moment, says Moshe, this is the moment in which Hashem reveals himself, and I don't want there to be an opening anywhere. That's an opening? That's the most ludicrous thing that anyone could possibly say. But you know what? Someone's going to say that, and they will say it. So to avoid that, Moshe says, kachatzos, in order that nobody should come and say that. It's just an unbelievable insight. There's more to say in that, but I want to leave that because I want to get to one other thing. If you will quickly flip to page 366 and 367, this is where the actual plague of the death of the firstborn is meted out. No. I looked at the wrong... Oh, I got it. I checked the wrong page. I looked at a different thing. Okay, I'm sorry. It's page...
356.
It's even before... Is that 356 or 7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
My position.
Yes, okay. Page 356 and 357, look at verses 29 and 30. Verses Choftes and Lamin. Hold the two places. Let's just read our two psukim again, just to get us the context. The verse that we read back on page 346 and 347, Moshe says that at about midnight I shall go out in the midst of Egypt. Every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. Let's list them. From the firstborn of Paro, sits on his throne, to the firstborn of the maidservant who is behind the millstone, and all the firstborn of the beast. Three things: Paro, maidservant, animals. Flip to page 356 and 350, where it's actually carried out. Verse 29, it was at midnight, because it really did happen at midnight, despite the fact that Moshe told him it was going to happen around midnight. But when did Hashem actually do it? He actually did it at midnight. That Hashem smote every firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Paro sitting on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and every firstborn animal. Obvious problem?
Where's the maidservant?
Finish the problem, the two parts of the problem.
But where was the captive?
Excellent. Right. What happened here? When he described who was going to die, it was Paro, maidservant, animal. And then when the Torah actually describes what happened, it went Paro, captive, animal. So that in the first verse we describe a maidservant, in the second verse we describe a captive. Yeah, ever see the problem? So Rashi, by us, in the first verse, addresses this. Well, he addresses it just in a way of why they both are listed. He doesn't attack it. We're running out of time as far as why the Torah does it this way. But I need to Rashi says two things. At the bottom of the first column on page 346, Ad Bechor HaShvi, until the firstborn of the captive. Now this phrase wasn't actually mentioned in our verse, but Rashi addresses it here so that you shouldn't think like it was, to make you aware of the fact that we're going to have this problem, we'll deal with it later. Why was the captive person's, think about this, why were the maidservants and the captives kill either of them killed? Like what'd they do wrong? The person who's captive sitting in the dungeon, they're a foreigner. They were captured by the Egyptians and made into their own slaves. So they're sitting in a dungeon, or they're out working as slaves. Why were their firstborn killed? They weren't Jewish taskmasters. They were slaves of power themselves. Says Rashi, why were the people in the dungeon? Lo malaku hashvuyim kidei shelo yomru yirasam tava elboinam vehevia peronos al mitzrayim. Because you know what those people are going to say sitting in a dungeon? They're going to hear all these cries coming up from ground level. They're below ground in a dungeon somewhere. They're going to say, finally, our gods have wreaked havoc on Egypt for keeping us here. So we have finally been avenged by our gods who we've been praying to. So in order, again, this is along the same line of thinking that we had previously. After all that's gone on, that's what they're going to say, this was their god? Yeah, you know what? If they're spared, and the Jews are spared, they're going to say, yeah, you see, the people who cause those who are suffering all these problems, our God. All right, so maybe there's a combination, a Jewish God and our God. They got together, they took care of the Mitzrim. Again, in order that there shouldn't be anything that anyone says, anything was any power here other than the Jewish God, so even the captive sitting in the dungeon, their firstborn also died. Everyone was included outside of the Jews. What about the next phrase? The Bechor, the Shifcha, the firstborn of the maidservants. Like what they were also servants of the Egyptians. Why were their firstborns killed? Says Rashi, why were the Bnei HaShifchos? She'af heim hayu mishta'abdim bohem usmeichim bitzarosam. Because they too took part. They were slaves of the Egyptians, but then as slaves they carried out the Egyptian taskmaster's request to enslave the Jewish people. Usmeichim b'tzarosam, and they rejoiced in the tzar, in the pain of the Jews. The Moral explains, when you're forced to do something against your will, so if you're forced to do it, so you do it being forced to do it. If you rejoice in that which you're doing, then you're considered as if you're doing it willingly. Don't tell me you were forced to do something if you were happy to do it. If you rejoice in doing it, then it's considered as if you did it yourself. And Ralph speaks of that much longer. We're running out of time. I just want to mention that idea. There's no such thing as being forced to doing something if you enjoy it. When you're forced to do something and you say, I really don't want to have to do this. I wish I didn't have to do this, but I do. So then, we look at you in Shammai, and you're viewing, well, you were forced to do it. You didn't have a choice. But if you rejoice in it, so then, it's a different story. And often in life, we have to do certain things. We're forced into doing it. And we maybe wouldn't have wanted to have done them otherwise. But when we get to, I wouldn't have wanted to, but now that I have to do it, I might as well enjoy it. When you do that, if you enjoy that, then you don't say, I had to, I didn't have a choice. It doesn't work that way. But if you do it with a heavy heart, and you wish you didn't have to do it, so then in Shemayim, you're viewed as if, listen, you're forced into doing it, there's nothing you can do about it. But even the firstborn of the maidservants who enjoyed and reveled and took pleasure in the suffering of the Jews, so then they were considered as if they did it also, and their firstborn were killed as well. Alright, I thought we'd get farther, but we did not. Those were some thoughts just in this parak, which describes the in-between of in-between the last of the ninth plagues, and then the introduction of the tenth. Okay. Enjoy, have a great week.